Good morning, everybody. Today we're starting a new chapter of Tanya. Of course, this follows the previous chapters, but it does stand on its own. We have talked about joy and the things that might inhibit or get in the way of a person living happily. We talked about material issues, challenges, deprivation. We talked about spiritual challenges and issues that a person might have. The last thing we were discussing was inappropriate thoughts. A person's mind takes them in places they don't want to be, and it gets them down, and they feel like they're worthless, and this makes them depressed. They feel like all of their avodas Hashem is a waste of time. They haven't gotten anywhere. They're still exactly where they left off, and what's the point? So the Alter Rebbe comes along and he says, don't make a mistake. The fact that you aren't transforming yourself, well, that's because you're not destined to be a tzaddik. And the fact that you have these challenges is actually an opportunity. And he explained in detail how there are things that a beinoni, that an ordinary person who has to deal with ordinary issues and problems, that a person like that could accomplish, that the greatest of tzaddikim cannot accomplish. So this is all very fine and good for inappropriate thoughts and challenges, lusts and cravings that might attack us or bombard us during a typical time of the day. The question is, what happens if this is specifically during davening? Now, I want to tell you something. If davening is not an issue in your life, if prayer is not part, really, of your everyday existence, this chapter of Tanya will not mean much to you. Because if davening is not a big deal to you, so why should it bother you if you do have bad thoughts, you don't have bad thoughts? If davening is just a question of reading the words at breakneck speed, tripping over yourself, and getting it done as quickly as possible, these issues will probably not come to the fore. That you will not really relate to what's being said here. Because what difference does it make? So I'm just getting through davening. But if you're not just knocking off davening, and we shouldn't, and if you're actually taking davening seriously, and of course you should, then you'll notice that during davening, when you try to have kavana, the dafke, specifically when you're trying to have kavana, that's when the strangest thoughts come to you. And there are people who get, for example, their best ideas when they're davening Shemoneh Esrei. And somehow the mind wanders most when they're doing that. They can do things that require intense concentration very well. They can fly drones. They can play basketball. They can be involved in cooking. And they're focused entirely on what they're doing. And the head, they don't get distracted. And they stay focused. When it comes to Shemoneh Esrei, all of a sudden they're all over the place. They tell a story once. A fellow finished davening. And his Rebbe, as a tzaddik, he turned around to me and he said, welcome home. He said, you've been all over the world. Right? Tzaddikim sometimes could be margish, can feel other people's machshavas. So in the event that you're a person who wants to take davening seriously, because you want to have a relationship with God. Now, this morning on the radio, Zelda asked me, she said, she let me know before she started that she's angry at God and in a feisty and fighting mood. Okay, good. I said, hope you're not fighting with me. So she says, no, she's angry. She wants to talk about relationships with God. You know, like, I thank God when things are good. I take responsibility when things are bad. And why is this God bad to me? And I'm doing all the things I should do, and so on and so forth. Every one of us thinks that we're doing everything we should do. We also think we have a contract with God, and we have expectations from God. He's supposed to deliver A, B, C, and D, breakfast in bed, and so on and so forth. Like, he owes us. But who said that's the case? That's just the premise we come with. That's the entitlement or inappropriate expectation we necessarily have. But at any rate, I told her that if you want to talk about a relationship with God, it's really comprised of, first you should get to know God, and you get to know him by studying his Torah. And then you should engage in an emotional relationship with God, and that's davening. And finally, every mitzvah is a connection point, a tzevet, it's a tzavta. It gives us an opportunity to forge and to nurture a greater relationship. So I said, you know, a person wants to get to know somebody, they date them, or they spend time with them. And they talk about them, they get to know them. That's what study of Torah is. Get to know God. God says, I'm an open book. Just read me. Get to know me. And I said, you want to have an emotional relationship with God? You want to feel God in your life? How much time do you put into davening? I can't say, I don't have a relationship with God. I'm frustrated at the lack of my relationship if I didn't try to have a relationship. And lastly, in a relationship, we do things for each other. So if you do things for somebody, a person who wants to nurture and cultivate and deepen their relationship with somebody, will do things for them, and there's like this mutually kind of symbiotic relationship where people do things for each other, and by doing things for each other, that becomes the currency of the relationship. So what are you doing for God lately? What have you done to go out of your way to express your love or your loyalty or your commitment? That's the idea of mitzvahs. We're going to focus on the davening today. So the problem, as we said with davening, is that the moment somebody starts to have kavana, all of a sudden his mind seems to drift and go somewhere else. Now, in and of itself, most people would assume that means their davening is actually worthless. Because if I really cared about this, and I really wanted to do it well, why are these bad thoughts coming to me? When they're focused on flying the drone, and you can't disturb them when they're doing that. Or maybe when they're watching The Simpsons. Don't disturb them. The guy's watching his hockey game. Forget about it. Like, he's totally clued in. Knows exactly what he's doing. Even some people, when they surf Facebook, they actually can drive into a wall or whatever it is. They walk into people because they're so caught up in what they're doing. They don't have machshavas others. They're not thinking about something else. They're involved in what they're doing. Why is, when it comes to davening, that our mind wanders? So a person might come to the conclusion that everything is bashkacha pratis, and that there's something expected of us insofar as these bad thoughts are concerned. And this gets really interesting, because both the Baal Shem Tov and the Magid of Mizritch, his successor, the Alter Rebbe's Rebbe, both seems to have articulated a strategy which the Alter Rebbe dismisses. Well, not entirely. He says this is for tzaddikim. It's not for regular people. So, for example, there's a famous Degel Machne Ephraim in Parshas Baal Eischa, besides a number of entries previously in Keser Shem Tov and in Magid Varav Yankov of the Magid, where the following two ideas, to make a kitzur, to make a synopsis, are offered. Number one, there's this notion that since everything has divine life, nothing can exist without divine animation. Just like we talk about the idea of tikkun olam, which doesn't mean to fix, but really means to perfect and release the divine sparks that are trapped in the material and physical reality. And how does the rubric of the physical elevate and become spiritual? By us utilizing, redirecting it, and extracting the sparks. So there's this idea that not only does the physical reality have sparks of godliness that animate it, but even the energy of thoughts. So if there's an energy of a bad thought, if there's a lust or a craving, it has to have a godly spark that animates it. In other words, it has to have something good beneath it all. For example, a person who would have lusting and craving for something material or something physical, actually what's driving this at the root source, the spark that animates it, is a lusting and a craving for the godliness of the thing. It's only that it got lost in translation. And the way it comes down to us, we see it only as, we only focus on the negative element of it. And that's like, there's a famous teaching of the Baal Shem Tov, who said, Sur Meira, turn away from the physical and material element of something, Asei Tov, develop and work on the good that's in it, because everything has good in it. Bakei Sholom, then try to create synthesis and create a sense of synergy and peace. But Adfeo, this is how a person is able to bring about a perfection of the world, elevating of the world. This is a doable thing, says the Baal Shem Tov. Now, on a very literal level, this is doable with your breakfast or lunch when you have the right thoughts, assuming the food is kosher. And there's a whole series right now called Food and Faith, and you can log on to that and find out more about that. But the idea then is that there is the possibility of elevating and transforming the physical material reality. We can do this. So there's this notion that even thoughts have a godly spark. And therefore, if a person has bad thoughts, especially in the middle of davening, it's because he's supposed to elevate those thoughts. So if he has a lust or a craving or desire for something which is enticing, something which enchanting and draws him in, he should think about the idea that what really is enchanting and what really is enticing is not the physical element which is here today, gone tomorrow. Everything physical rots, and then it's not very attractive. However, there's a holy and spiritual energy which is attractive, and that's eternal, and that's really what it's about. Anyway, this is like one school of thought, one strategy which is articulated in the writings of the Baal Shem Tov and the Magid. And another is that the bad thoughts that come your way are necessarily supposed to humble you, show you how lowly you are, how crass you are, how inappropriate you are, how far from God you are, and what's the point of doing that? So that a person is humbled. When a person is humbled and made contrite and made small, and then he'll be able to serve Hashem properly. So I have these like two ideas. And the Alter Rebbe, in the outset of this chapter, rejects both of these ideas out of hand. And he says, this is for tzaddikim, and explains to us why he rejects it. He said, this is the book of Beinonim. This is the book of in-between people, everyday average people. And everyday average people are not going to be able to do that, and quite the contrary. If you try to do that, it will only bring you down. And Alter Rebbe will explain why. You need to understand and appreciate that the Baal Shem Tov's teachings were not distilled in a lucid fashion. They're very, very like randomly collected. He didn't write a book called Kes HaShem Tov. Kes HaShem Tov was collections of teachings recorded by his disciples that eventually went into a book of pithy teachings attributed to the Baal Shem Tov. Some are precise and exact, some are less precise, but that's how Kes HaShem Tov developed. Tzavos HaRivosh, which literally translates as the will and testament of Rabbi Saul Baal Shem Tov, is really not his will and testament. He didn't write this book and say, okay, here's my will and testament. The Shalah did something like that a long time before he died, because he was leaving Germany, going to Israel, knew he's never going to see his children again, so he wrote them a last will and testament. It's about 500 pages long. it forms the corpus or the basis of the forerunner of Hasidic teaching. So this idea that the Baal Shem Tov wrote a tzava is simply wrongheaded. Rather, Baal Shem Tov would teach in Yiddish. His teachings were recorded by others in Hebrew. Sometimes there was many important details lost in translation because they didn't understand the Yiddish and the Hebrew translations are not exact. There's a long epistle from the Alter Rebbe about that, demonstrating how a basic teaching of the Baal Shem Tov had been distorted and brought about much opposition because they didn't understand. The guy who wrote it didn't know how to translate the Yiddish into Hebrew properly. And he used one word, and that one word caused a lot of problems. And the Alter Rebbe explains what the real teaching of the Baal Shem Tov is. But the Alter Rebbe took upon himself to take the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov, of the Maggid, and distill them into a lucid system of Avodas Hashem, a systematic way of here is how you can be the perfect person. If you want, you can call it the first self-help book ever written, you know, like centuries ahead of its time. Alter Rebbe basically takes all those teachings. You have to be like a Rambam, like a brain of the Alter Rebbe, to take all this teaching and to be able to put it all together and say, okay, so here's the bottom line. Here's what we can do to make life work. And that's what the book of Tanya is, the book of life, the book of how to contend with the issues and challenges that will face the everyday person and how to make sure that each and every one of us can maximize his or her journey on earth, making sure that the time we spend here is well spent and effective. So, with that in mind, you understand that the Alter Rebbe will reject certain ideas which are found in the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov or the Maggid. He doesn't reject Chas V'Shalom those teachings. This was his Rebbe, and his Rebbe's Rebbe. This, but he's explaining to you that that's not what they meant. And it was never meant for ordinary people, and it can't work. All right, let's go to chapter Tanya 28. Let's just begin the chapter. Va'afilu im neiflim loy hirhuri taivis v'sha'or machshav zaris. Bearing in mind everything we've discussed over the last 15 to 20 minutes, even if we have a situation where a person finds that thoughts kind of cascade into his life, it's not something that says, okay, let's sit and think about this. I want to focus on this. No, this happens. It's neiflim lei. They simply somehow fall into his mind. He didn't plan. There's no way this comes from even. And it's hirhurei taivis, it's desires for sensual pleasure, lusts and cravings, sha'ar machshava zaris, other bad thoughts. And it comes b'shas ha'avayda. It comes at the time of service. This could even be b'teira, by the way. It could be b'teira. I remember once I was joking with friends of mine. You know, we didn't date. Until we were ready to get married, didn't date. So I said, what are you going to talk about? I never sat and talked to a girl in my life. What are you going to talk about? So my friend said, don't worry, just bring a Gemara, open the Gemara, you'll right away have what to talk about. This is the yeshiva. This is the challenge of yeshiva bachim. You open the Gemara, that's what we call in yeshiva slang, it's called the bull session. Because you start to shove the bull, you start to talk. And somehow, you always find what to talk about as soon as you open a sefer. Right? Then you get older, smarter, and you have no time on your hands. Then you don't learn that you can't waste any time. But yeshiva bachim have time on the hands. They don't feel a sense of urgency always. They don't feel they have to get this done now. So mornings and afternoons could pass in social engagement and conversations. Maybe it's you and your study partner, maybe it's the whole table of people, and so on and so forth. So when it comes to Shas HaAveda, when it comes to time to serve Hashem, and this is something that takes strenuous efforts, we specifically use the word Aveda. Aveda is like the same word as Eved, which literally translates or mistranslates as slave. Slaving away. This is tough, it's difficult, it's harsh. So when you're trying to do Aveda, and you're really dedicating yourself, and you want to study Torah now, or tefillah b'kavana, emphasis. Not what people call tefillah. Not the reading of words at breakneck speed and turning of pages and movement of lips like a hummingbird. But actually tefillah b'kavona. You're actually trying to study. See, Torah doesn't have to say that because if you don't know what you're talking about, you're not studying Torah. No normal person opens up a Gemara and just reads the words as fast as he could, not understanding a word he says. What's the point? If you don't understand what you're saying, you're not studying Torah. It's self-understood. But somehow davening gets a bad rap. People think you open a book, read the words as fast as you could, and that's called davening. It really isn't, but that's what people do. So the Alter Rebbe says, I'm talking about tefillah b'kavana. Torah is Torah. Yeah, you're studying, you're trying to understand. Tefillah b'kavana. Now, interestingly, earlier, the Alter Rebbe talked about hirhurim royim v'tayves royis. He talked about bad thoughts, bad lusting, and bad craving. Here he doesn't say hirhurim royim v'tayves royim. Here he says hirhurim tayves, thoughts of lust and craving, v'shar machshav azaris, and other alien thoughts. He doesn't talk about bad. He doesn't talk about lusting and cravings that are bad. Why not? Well, the answer is simple. Because when you're davening, you're supposed to be thinking about God. You're supposed to be thinking about the meaning of the words you're saying, not other things. So if you're thinking about other things instead of thinking about davening, that's already a machshav azara. That's already an alien thought. That's it. Right there, you got an alien thought. The alien thought doesn't have to be a bad thought. It could be a good thought.
Not in the right time.
It's a zara. You know, if a person who is a kohen serves in the Beis HaMikdash, that's good. That's good. What if a big tzaddik who's not a kohen goes to serve in the Beis HaMikdash? He's just a levi. He's just a levi. He's a zara. He's a stranger. He's an alien. He's an alien. How kind of alien am I? I look like I came from outer space. That's what the Torah calls him. He's a stranger. Doesn't belong here. If you have a situation where somebody's a Yisrael, say he's a zara. So zara just means it's not the right thing at the right time, the right place. And just to help you understand that, imagine a person who's very gregarious and boisterous and joyous and engaging. You know, people like the life of the party kind of people. And he walks into a funeral. Nebuch, everybody's waiting to bring the coffin out. And he starts chatting to people, hey, what's up? And he's like being his boisterous party self. People look at me, he's like a lunatic. I said, what a lunatic? I just did this 5 minutes ago from the party. Yeah, in a party, it was appropriate. Here, it's totally inappropriate. So inappropriateness doesn't have to be something bad. It becomes bad by definition when it's not the right thing. It doesn't belong here now. The person's in a really bad mood and you start asking them for this, that, or the other thing. This is not the right time for that. So davening is a time to speak to Hashem. Davening is a time to express and emote yourself before Hashem, to ask for your needs. Davening is not a time to think about, I think maybe it would be a good idea if I would change my chavrusa and do a different study, thinking about Torah. That's great, not now. So that's machshav azaris. And what do you do when these thoughts come? And they come, fast and furious. What should we do? Like, who do you call? The thought police? Ghostbusters? Who's supposed to help you here? So the Alter Rebbe says, when this happens, do not think, and here he basically rules out those two strategies which are found in writings and teachings of the Baal Shem Tov, Magid, and the Talmidim. Do not think that you should elevate it, which means ruminate and think about the thought until you're able to find the spark of goodness and redirect it. Or do not think that you should become morose, depressed, and sad. Rather, the right approach when a person sees that as he or she is trying to daven, and suddenly they're being bombarded with strange thoughts, al yoshis leiv alehen, do not pay any attention to it. Just don't pay attention. Eliyasiach daite mehem kerega. Instead of paying attention, a person should immediately redirect his or her thoughts. The answer is redirection. The answer is ignore it. Let's talk about this on a very simple level. Sometimes you get attacked by people, harassed by people, bothered by people. The more attention you give them, the more you get sucked into this, the worse it's going to get. Some situations you know that you can't win. These are called no-win situations. So what do you do in a no-win situation? Just shut down. Ignore it. Years ago, there was an older, very crotchety individual, unfortunately, very angry person. So it's not my fault, but he was just angry, and I was the easy target. Rabbis often, you know, if you're angry, you take it on the rabbi. So I don't even remember what set him off, but it was in shul, and he started to scream at me in public, berate me and scream at me in public. Like, what was I supposed to do? try to reason with a guy who's not reasonable, that wasn't going to work. I knew from past experience it's not going to work. But try to explain to people that I'm being attacked for no reason. And there was no way out. So what did I do? I just lowered my head. I let him scream at me. I said, good Shabbos. And I moved on. There's nothing else to do. It was an embarrassing, uncomfortable moment. And instead of having many, many more embarrassing, uncomfortable moments, it's bad enough, you know, you suffer the indignity and limit it instead of exposing and expanding it. Here you have a situation where you have these bad thoughts. What do you think the Yetzer Hara is trying to accomplish? What do you think this is about? This is about getting you to stop davening. As Balta Rebbe soon going to explain, the reason these thoughts come to you, dafka by davening, is because your davening is meaningful. Your davening would be worthless. The Yetzer Hara wouldn't bother with you. The Yetzer Hara, the Satan, the negative forces that Hashem created, only bother with issues that are worth bothering with. So take it as a compliment. Clearly, you've been selected as a specimen, something that has to be dealt with. You're one of the troublemakers. So because you're making trouble for the Klipa, because your davening is meaningful, that's why you're going to get bombarded with these thoughts. So where does the Yetzer Hara want to take you? Down the garden path of those thoughts. Al Tereb is so simple. Al Yoshes Leiv Alehen. That's the strategy. Don't respond. Don't engage. You can't win here. Vagam, the Alter Rebbe says, not only should you redirect, not only should you take a mind away from this, instead of looking for the godly spark and thinking that maybe I can redirect and elevate and find goodness here and use this as a stepping stone to vault myself into a higher level and notice something about divinity and godliness that I didn't appreciate before, but only now after I had these bad thoughts am I going to be elevated. I you know, like when a person, like when you have a dam, so you have this water that's restrained and held back, and then eventually it's able, you finally reach, you know, you come over the top of the dam, and then the water comes a great force. So you think, this is what he's trying to do. He's putting pressure on me, and all that pressure, and I'm going to utilize this. Don't do that. Do not be a fool. Please, the Alter Rebbe says, don't be a fool and think that you are going to be able to elevate those thoughts. You're not going to be, it's not going to work. Why? Kinoida, as it's known, ki lo nemru devarim haheim elo letzadikim. Things like taking ugly bad thoughts, things like taking extraneous parts of life and trying to incorporate into the mainstream focus of Avodas Hashem is something that was specifically given to the purview of tzadikim.
But we are benonim.
Exactly. Well, halavai benonim.
Halavai.
We're working. We're wishing to be. Don't wish. Wish doesn't help anybody. You have to actively work on being benonim. We're working to be benonim. That's correct. And since we're working to be benonim, the most foolish thing we could do is think that we're capable of elevating something that can only bring us down. Like the Alter Rebbe talks about later. He says you go mud wrestling, you're not coming out clean. So what do? Get out of the arena. The longer you stay, the more dirty you get. You can't come out clean here. This is a no-win situation. Only tzaddikim who are objectively able to look at this can elevate it. See, because the moment there's subjectivity, it's not possible for you anymore to objectively analyze it. Rabbi Steinsaltz likes to tell a story about, supposedly a real story, about a famous painter, a painter of ferocious dog. And there was a display of paintings. And he had these art critics. And people were just like shaken. This picture was scary. The ferocious dog was so lifelike. It was just, they couldn't analyze it for its art value because they became emotionally disencumbered. Emotionally encumbered. So they couldn't disencumber themselves from the fear or fright or uncomfortability that this picture projected to look at it, objectively speaking, from the outside. The moment you're emotionally involved, you're not going to be able to figure out a solution. It's like many people who go into psychology do so because they want to help themselves, supposedly. But I don't think that ever works. You can't psychoanalyze yourself. You can help somebody else. There's a famous expression, "In chovish matres atzmei." If your hands are tied, you cannot untie your own knots. Only somebody else can untie your knots. Why? Because you're subjectively engaged. And the moment you have an axe to grind here, the moment there's something personal here, you're no longer capable of looking at this objectively. And many doctors who will never treat, certainly not operate on close relatives. Why? Because to look at a person as a collection of wires or plumbing connections, it's okay if you're not connected to that person. But if that's a person you love and care for very much, it's very hard almost impossible to divorce your personal feelings, your personal worries and anxieties, which is not a good feeling to have when you're in the operating theater. You have to be able to be clinical, be able to divorce yourself from it. So obviously we're not talking about anything as graphic here, but the tzaddikim have nothing to do with those machshavas. And because the tzaddikim have nothing to do with those bad thoughts, they're capable of elevating them. She'ein neifel lahem machshavas zara shalahem. Alter Rebbe says, what does it mean a tzaddik? A tzaddik is a person who has no yetzahara. Because he has no yetzahara in the classic sense, because these things hold no interest to him. So therefore, there's no reason he would have started to think about this. Why did he ruminate about this? In some Maamar Machsidus, there's a very beautiful mashal that's given. Little children love to play with toys. That's what they look for. Look, toy soldiers, toy dolls. They love to play with little toys. Legos excite them. I don't know. The list goes on. And that's part of their world. At a certain point, most normal people graduate from toy soldiers and dolls, and they move on to adulthood. And once they move on to adulthood, it doesn't excite them to sit down and play with Lego. Yes, you might do it for your children or grandchildren just to try to forge a relationship and make them feel good, but it's not something like, I can't wait to play Lego again. I can't wait to get back in there and play with the dolls and dress the dolls and have my toy soldiers clash with each other. It doesn't have any interest. It doesn't hold any interest for you. Why? Because you've changed. Because you're no longer a child. So a person could love candy at a certain point, then it's not interested in candy anymore. They're interested in different candy. They didn't really become elevated, but they're different. People are different because they become mature. So Chassidus, it says sometimes, similarly, we could experience the same thing in the continuum of Avodas Hashem, that as a immature or childlike individual from a perspective of Avodas Hashem, you get caught up in certain taivas, but the tzaddik has matured. And in the tzaddik's mature level, from his new cerebral spiritual vantage point, these things that interested people or maybe interested him once upon a time don't interest him anymore. So why does a person who cares about whatever taiva, whatever lust and craving it is, think about these things? Because they care about it, that's why. Because it's part of their world. So why did it come to me during davening? I wasn't trying to think about it during davening. Well, because you are basically, that's part of your life. And it's not so hard for the Yetzirah to simply pull you away from what you're doing and remind you of the things that have an interest to you, the things that catch your attention, the things you find enchanting and fascinating, the things that draw you in. But the tzaddik isn't drawn in by these things. So if the tzaddik is suddenly thinking these thoughts come to him, clearly it's not because the tzaddik is being enchanted or the tzaddik is being engaged or the tzaddik is being drawn in. These things don't draw him in. So where do those machshavas come from then? So the answer that's given is that the tzaddik doesn't have, it's not his thoughts, he has to elevate somebody else's thoughts. And this goes into a very nuanced and subtle idea, as I spoke about before, that not only physical reality has some kind of spiritual life force behind it, but even something metaphysical, even something totally untangible like a thought, also has an energy, a spark of godliness that enables it to exist. And so it has to be elevated. So who will elevate it? One who is able. And the only way you can do that is if you are totally objective about it. But if the thoughts are yours, it's who you are. From the negativity in your own heart, Alter Rebbe says, how will you elevate it? You're here. How are you elevating it? You're here with the thoughts. You're tethered right here below. Now I'm gonna set those thoughts free. You can't set them free. You can't set them free because you can't set yourself free. If that's where you are, you can't go higher than where you are yourself. So when you have a tzaddik, the machshav has come to him. He's not subjectively engaged. He's objective about all this. He doesn't get drawn into it. But you, the moment you think about it, you're just going to get drawn in. And therefore, the Alter Rebbe says, it's impossible to fathom or imagine that you'll be able to elevate these thoughts. Okay, so then what's the other thought? Oh, so maybe I'm supposed to get depressed then. Maybe this is just the God's way of bringing me down because I was getting too high and mighty by my davening. I thought, wow, look how cool I am. I'm davening so well. I'm davening with kavana. And maybe that's a problem. Maybe because I'm conceited. I'm getting carried away with myself. So therefore, Hashem had to remind me, don't get so excited. Remember who you are. Remember where you really are, where you really exist, and that will bring a person down. Alter Rebbe says, ach, afal pikein, even though you're not supposed to elevate the thought, which means it's your thought, this is you, don't think that you're some kind of razzle-dazzle tzaddik who can elevate these thoughts. Okay, but al yipaliba bekirbe. Let his heart not fall within. Li yes meze, otsev nivze, that he should not find himself depressed or find himself repulsive. B'shas ha'aveda. Why not? Why not? The Alter Rebbe says, shetzarich li yes besimcha rabba. Because avedas Hashem has to be done out of absolute total joy. Great joy. Because if it's not done with joy, it's not done wholeheartedly. And if it's not done wholeheartedly, it can't be done successfully. The only way it can be done successfully is if it's done wholeheartedly. And for this, you need to have joy. So what am I supposed to do then? All the strategies I thought work, you told me it doesn't work for me. Says the Alter Rebbe, la adrabe. What should you do? Yischazik yeser. Daven more devotedly. Intensify your efforts. Be even more assiduous. You try to hard, even harder to refocus. Try even harder to daven with kavana. Do it even harder and even more. By taking to heart, that the falling of this bad thought, where does it come from? From the left side. They're just trying to bring you down. They're just trying to knock you down. In the trying to take your godly soul down. So what should you do? Because, you know, we already learned earlier in Tanya that there are the Shtenefashes. There are two souls. Both are battling over this small city, so to speak. When one side launches an attack, what does the other side do? You counterattack. So now your task is to work even harder at davening. And if you work even harder at davening, so with God's help, then you'll overcome the bad thoughts that are coming your way, and you'll manage to take it to the next level. So that's the only answer, ultimately, the only strategy, according to the Alter Rebbe, that can actually work, namely, redouble your efforts, intensify your efforts, work even harder, and then we can go back to the dam metaphor. Well, everything is with this, because of the path, it's a path of greater resistance, because of the resistance, in the end, ultimately, hopefully more can be accomplished. That's part one in the Thought Police, to be continued. It's not going.